Next year, Parshas Vayakhel. Galinsky, that's all. He mentioned that one Yom Shishi, one Erev Shabbos, is on the bottom of his building, and he sees a guy, one of his neighbors, comes up with his baskets, you know, full of things for Shabbos, and he noticed a lot of papers, you know, sticking out from this bag. So he asks him, where are all these papers? He says, oh, he says, these newspapers. He says, these are my Oynig Shabbos. Newspaper, that's my Oynig Shabbos. So he says, fine, it's Shiloh whether it's okay on Shabbos to read these things. But he says, even, he says, according to those that fine, you can read these newspapers on Shabbos. But he says, but that's his Oynig Shabbos. That's your Oynig Shabbos. That's what gives you pleasure. Brings a midrash in this week's sedra at the beginning. Vayakal Moshe is called Adas B'nei Yisrael. V'chulei says, V'yom Hashvi Yelechem Kodesh. So Amar Lema Kodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael, Hashem said to Yisrael, Im atem nikalim b'chol Shabbos v'Shabbos b'vatei Knesus b'vatei Midrashus v'oskim b'Torah. If you come in every Shabbos to the Beis Medrash to learn Torah, Malani Aleichem ki'ilu himlachtem osiv olimi, as if you made me king in my world. And then it continues, Mikan samchu b'chol tfutza sagol alit kabeitz b'vatei Knesus. So from here we see the Indian and in all of the tfutzos that they gather together in shuls to read the mikra, the rechumash, lidrash b'divri agada after suda shacharis. Finish your morning meal, go to the Beis Medrash. Yushalmi says, Shalom nitnu Shabbos v'yamim tomim ela kadei lasok mem Torah. Shabbos and Yontav were given, Dafka Hashem gave them, and we should be busy learning Torah on these days. And the Zohar says, "Shemotzi Shabbos, k'shechozeres aneshama hayesera limkoma, nishel azeiz a chiddush chit shabatorah." That every Motzi Shabbos, when our neshama yesera leaves us, it goes in Shemayim, and in Shemayim they're asked, "Okay, so what were you mechadish the Shabbos?" Right? Not what newspapers did you read, but what chiddush Torah were you mechadish the Shabbos? So he brings a mashal to this idea of reading newspapers. To the following. He says, there was once a king. When he became king, he decided he wanted to do something nice for the people. And he said, he wants to give whatever they want, a wish. Everybody gets a wish, and he'll try to fulfill it. So his aides said, the king, you can't do this. I mean, there's a lot of people, and they're gonna eat you out of house and home. You know, you can't offer. So he says, okay. He says, well, I'll 1 hour. 1 hour? I'll give an hour. Whoever sees me in an hour, I'll give them what they want. Fine, so word got out, and there's a huge, huge lineup of people ready to come to the king to ask for their wishes. They hope they can get in that hour. And one guy comes, walks, and right to the front of the line. And nobody stops him. Who was that? He was the local leper, right? Mitzora. Right, he's a guy who was full of boils, and they're all, and you know, all broken up, and with pus, and he was very smelly, and all this. It was like a disgusting, you know, person, and nobody could get near the guy. So whenever he came, everybody like made way for him. Here, please, you know. And he lived in the outside in the town, and he lived off the food in the garbage dumps. He was a pathetic person. Anyway, so he came right up to the. To the front of the line because nobody stopped him, and so he was first in line to go into the king. So they saw, how can you go into the king looking like, say, try to, you know, spray some perfume on him a little bit, then, right, change his clothes a little bit, you know, try to help the situation. Anyways, so the king says, okay, let the first guy in. So he comes in, this Mitzora, and the king says, what would you like? She says, okay, let me tell you the truth, king. You know, he says, I have these boils all over me, and they're disgusting, and they're itchy, and they're bothersome, and I don't have a life. The only thing is, what gives me pleasure? The pleasure is when I can scratch these itchy, you know, wounds that I have. You know, I scratch them, it makes me feel good. He said, but the problem is, I have some on my back, and I can't reach them. So what I'd like from the king is if you could have made for me these brushes or something, you know, with long handles, back scratchers, you know, so that I can scratch my back. That's what I would like. So the aide for the king is standing there, and he's like laughing. You know, he's like, pfft. So the Mitzora sees that, and he says, excuse me, well, that's not nice. He says, what are you laughing at me? I'm a poor thing. It's not nice. What are you laughing at me? So the king turns to the aide, he says, yeah, why are you laughing at him? It's not nice. He says, listen, he says, king, I'm not laughing at his physical disabilities. I'm laughing at his mental disabilities. I mean, he's not even a king. He can ask. He should ask the king for a doctor to cure him from his of his tzaras, of his leprosy. Not to, something to scratch his back with. I mean, that's ridiculous. Why is it? So he said, tell him not to tell me what to do, you know. I can do what I want. I can ask for what I want. So he said, what? Even at what a shota, even after he was, you know, told what he should do, he still, no, he wants his back scratched. So that's the mashal. What's the nimshal? He says, so too. He said, that's what these are, newspapers. Their own, they give you pleasure. Yeah, just like it gives them pleasure to scratch his back with things. But that, there are more important things that you, that you should ask for. They should give you pleasure in this world, not back scratches. Okay. It says in the pasuk, "Vanisim heviu esav nei shoam besav nei miluim leifod v'lechoshen." So the nisim, the princes, they brought the stones for the avni miluim and the for the evahod nechoshen. So famous Rashi says, "Maru nisim lisnade b'chanukas mizbeach betchila." When it came to the inauguration of the mizbeach, they were the first to offer their sacrifices. But over here with the malachas of mishkan, they didn't. So Rashi says, "Ela kacham runasim." They said the following: "Isnadvut sibor masha misnadbim, masha rechasrim anu mashlim moto." Because when they came to them, they said, "Look, we're not going to give anything, any donations. We'll let everybody give what they have to give, and we're going to make the deficit up. Whatever's left over, we'll give." But given shishlim and sibor at the call, in the end, that sibor gave everything. It says, "Ben lachai tadayam." Amru Nisim, Ma'aleinu Lasot. So now he said, oh, we're stuck, you know, we have nothing to give anymore. Say, Viyu et Avnei Ashoam. So the Avnei Ashoam, even though they were very valuable in and of themselves, but Chazal tell us that they didn't, weren't even their own. They fell with the man or whatever, so really they had nothing to give of their own. So they saw that, you know, they didn't have anything to give, so when it came to the Chanukah Samishkan, they made sure they were the first to, didn't want to make that mistake again, and they were the first to offer their sacrifices. And says Rashi, "Lafi shenisnatzlu mitchila nechzru ot mishman vanesiim ksiv." And they lost a yud from their name. It's written nesiim without a yud. Why? Because they were lazy. Rashi says nitzatzlu. They were lazy and they didn't come forth right away. As a result, they lost a yud from their name. That's famous Rashi. The Ksav Sofer says it wants to be melamed zchus for the Nesim, you know, what, you know, why did they do this? So he says that Chazal tell us that a mitzvah is called Al Shem Gomra. Right? Somebody who finished the mitzvah is called in his name, because he's the one who finished it. And without him, there wouldn't be the mitzvah. He need him to finish it up. So therefore, he says, that was the cheshbon of the Nesim. You know, they said, we could give, but we'd rather we'd have the mitzvah called on our name. So we'll let people to give what they can give, and we'll finish it off. So it'll be called Al Shem Gomra, the name of the one to finish it off. We'll be the one to finish it off. We'll get the final donations. It'll be called in our name. Meaning, they're very, Shem Shemayim. So what was their mistake? Mistake was, the famous Shaila, what takes preference, Zerizus or Hidder? Right? Is it more important to be quick and do things right away, or to do things later with more Hidur? They thought, hey, we'll do it later, and it'll be more Mudar. Mitzvah called on our name, more Mudar. But no, they should have put that aside and did it right away. The famous Shaila, the Chacham Tzvi, and the Mishle Melech, others, Radbaz, they came to Shaila if a person is stuck in prison, and the authorities said, fine, we'll let you out for an hour or so to do one of your mitzvahs, whatever mitzvah you want. When should you go leave prison? Right, so maybe you should choose Yom Kippur, maybe Purim, hear the Megillah, whatever. When? So they answer, no. When should he ask to leave? Right now. Right now, and whatever mitzvah you got, the daven, to put on tefillin, whatever it might be, the mitzvahs that you can do right now, do it now. But I can do a nicer, bigger mitzvah later on. No, now, Zrizus is more important. Do what you can do now, don't worry about later. Chaperein right at the moment. And that was the fault, therefore, of the Nesim, that they didn't, you know, chaperayin right away. They had good intent, you know, a hit or a letter, like Al Shem Gomer, but just do it right away. This topic, he brings a story, mashal, that the Divrei Chaim Mitzanz brings. So I brought in other contexts before. There was once a woman, a villager, and very, very, very poor, and she had a number of children, and she didn't have what to eat. So she davened to Hashem, and said, Hashem, please find me something to eat for me, my children. So, sure enough, what happened, she found an egg, a freshly laid egg. So she picked up the egg, and she said, children, look, look, an egg. So they're jumping up and down, yay, we have something to eat, you know, we have an egg. So she goes, no, we're not going to eat this egg. I said, no, why? He says, because I have a better idea. We'll take this egg, I'll go to the neighbor, put it under his chicken, and then it'll hatch. And then we'll have a little bird, you know, a little chicken that's going to grow up to be a, you know, big chicken. So they said, wow, that's wonderful. You mean so we're going to have, like, actually meat to eat, like a chicken to eat? She goes, no, we're not going to eat the chicken. He says, not eat the chicken? Why? What are we going to do with the chicken? She says, we're going to let it, you know, lay some more eggs. And lay some more. Oh, right. So every day we'll have eggs to eat? She says, no. We're not going to eat those eggs. We're going to let her hatch these eggs, and we're going to have a whole bunch of chickens. She says, wow, we're going to a whole bunch of, we're going to eat everyday chicken. She says, no, we're not going to eat these chickens either. We're going to leave these chickens, they hatch more eggs, have more chickens. And then when we have all these chickens, we're going to take them, and we're going to sell them, and buy a calf. And then the calf's going to grow up and be a nice big cow. And they said, wow, you mean we're going to have actually meat, you know, steaks? He says, no, we're not going to eat the cow either. We're going to have the cows going to give birth and have other cows and more cows. We're going to have a whole, you know, stable full of these animals. And that's worth a lot of money. And then we're going to take these cows, we're going to sell half of them, buy a house with it. And with the other half of the cows, we're going to use them and to plow and we're going to plant. We're going to have a nice house. We're going to have plenty of food to eat. And the kids are so happy and jumping up and down. And all of a sudden she drops the egg and it breaks. There go all the dreams. So the Rei Chaim says, what's the nimshal? Says that the person has to live for the present, not in the future. Don't all these dreams, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Forget about it. Now, here and now, do what you got to do now. Cause it's recent now, not, don't worry about it later. Dreams, nice to dream, but you have to act on the situations that you have at hand. Don't worry about the future. Take advantage of the present and don't instead of dreaming so much about the future. Brings a Gemara in Gittin that the Mizbeach, the din is you're not allowed to build a Mizbeach with iron, right? Anything metal. But Shlomo Melech was Mahadir, he wanted to make the whole base of Migdash without any metal touching any of the rocks. So how do you cut the rocks? So there's this little worm called a Shamir. And this special power to put the Shamir and this worm on the rock and it splits the rocks in half. That's how we cut the rocks. So he's looking for the Shamir. So somebody told him that the head of the demons, name is Ashmedai, so he knows where this Shamir can be found. So Shlomo sent Binayu ben Yoyada on a mission, go find the chief demon, the Ashmedai, and find the Shamir. Okay, so he found Ashmedai, and they're walking along or whatever, and they see a guy that he was sitting on the ground, and people were lined up, and he was telling the people their future. You know, looking at his crystal ball or whatever, and says, tell everybody what their future. So Ashmedai looks, and he starts laughing, like chuckling. So Benayahu turns to him and says, what are you laughing about? She says, I'll tell you what I'm laughing about. He says, this guy's telling about the future of all these people. This guy doesn't even realize he himself is sitting under him is a buried treasure of the king. So he doesn't know what's under him, and he's telling other people about the future. Does he know what about the here and now? So he said, that's the story, but what we can glean from that story is same so too. Hashem gives us all types of of kalim for to do tremendous things, and we have them, right? But what we think, oh, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. What do you mean, going to do? Take advantage of what you have now, or the here and the now. Don't worry about so much about the future. Do what you can do right now. Okay. Similarly, on that same Rashi, we learn another idea. It says, he brings from that Rav Yitzhala Blazer, he was a Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salant. He was an Ilui, and he was like 14 years old. He put out his first, father put out a whole big pilpul that he wrote when he was 14. Anyways, he had trouble making a living, so he got a job as he used to dye wool, whatever. And Rav Yisrael Salant, you know, saw that it's a little bit of a waste of a potential over here. So he, without even asking Rav Yitzhala, he got him a job as the Rav in Petterburg, which is a very chashev Rabbanis, you know, big city. And he was 25 years old at the time only. And he became the Rav of Petterburg. So he was there for 10 years as a Rav there. And then he felt that it was like stealing too much of his time, you know, being involved in Rabbanis, and he wanted to just be able to grow in his learning, Musar, whatever. So he quit the job, and he became a Rav in Kovna, which was where Rabbi Yisrael Salant was, so he can be by his Rebbe and learn, etc. And his wife had a little, like, tavern or whatever, and that's how they made ends meet. So Rav Yerucham Emir recalls that when Rav Yitzhala, you know, wanted to leave Petterburg and go to Kovna, so he, of course, asked advice of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salant, you know, should he go, should he not go? So he asked him what the situation is, and he says, tell me something. Is any kavod involved over here, going to, you know, going to Kovna, be the Rebbe in Kovna? He says, no. Is there any money involved? He says, no. He says, okay, then you can take the job. Right? Meaning, if there's money, if there's kavod, so then maybe you're not being honest with yourself. Maybe you have these personal bias. Oh, you're getting a lot of kavod. So, but if there's no kavod, no money, there's nothing pushing you, there's nothing, you know, drawing you to go to these to here. So then that shows you that your decision is without any personal bias. She says, fine, so then you can go. So as we saw, Rashi brings about the Nisim. He says these Nisim were tremendously great. He says the Chazal tells that a Shifcha Layam, what Yecheskel Ben Buzi, the Navi, didn't see, right? So even the lowest of person in Klal Yisrael at the time were great. So you can imagine the Nasi. These were tremendously great people, yet, because they were, we saw before, they were lazy in Nitatzlu, you know, they're lazy and they didn't, without realizing it, you know, they thought, oh, great, we'll let everybody get donations, whatever. But they didn't realize it was, their decision was based on laziness. They didn't, they were no geva davar. And therefore they weren't able to give a proper, proper psak for themselves of what to do with the donations. He says, he gives an example. He says when he was, he made a yeshiva in Chadera for New Olim, and to try to, you know, mechazik them in Yiddishkeit or whatever. And they were learning in like the shul there in the town, and they needed a place of their own, a yeshiva and a place of dorms, whatever. So he went to America to try to collect money, funds for it. So he says, can you imagine, you know, if I, let's say I go to a gvir and I say, I'm collecting money for this, you know, Rechashev institution, whatever. And he said, and he would say to me, how much do you need for the whole project? So $3 million. So he says, and how much have you collected so far? He goes, oh, 30,000. So he says, and how much do you think you can collect? They said, I don't know. So he said, listen, see what you collect with your driver or whatever, and then I'll give you the rest. Right? It's unbelievable. Right? Can you imagine something? If somebody would have offered me something like that? This guy's the biggest tzaddik in the world, right? And so that's what the Nisim did. They said, let Klal Yisrael give what they can give. We'll give the rest. Whatever. They can do what they can do, and we'll give the rest. Unbelievable. But still, we see that as great as a thing it seems to us, but the underlying thing why they didn't give was really because they were lazy. They didn't realize that. As great as these people were. It's a very interesting maysa that he says in Europe there was the Maskilim got involved and they wanted to, they convinced the authorities that the, to make the Rebbes have to learn Russian, right, to learn Russian, and knowing that they're, and get tested, to make sure they know it, and if they don't pass, then they get taken down, because they knew they're not going to, of course, do it, or be able to, want to, or learn Russian, whatever, and then they'll be taken out of their positions, and then they can fill the positions with maskilim, whatever. So it was a terrible gzera, and so they're debating what they should do to try to cancel the gzera. So they were clearing, should they go to Peterburg? That's where they were. That were there in Kovna, and they should we go to Peterburg in order to try to avert the gzera? So they were discussing the situation with Rabbi Yisrael Salant and Kovna. What should we do? So some said it's not gonna. It's a waste of time. It's a lost cause. They're not gonna. There's no way they're gonna change their thing. Others are saying no. Maybe we can still try. Whatever. So they're deciding what to do. So they asked Rabbi Yisrael Salant what to do, and he said, "Let's go to Peterburg. Come, let's go." He got up, you know. Get his coat, go to Petr. So they said to him, the other Rabbanim said to him, Rebbe, we didn't mean you to go, you know. You don't have to schlep to Petr. It's 800 kilometers from here, and it's freezing cold, and we're not expecting you. We just want to decide, should we try, you know, should we go to Petrburg to, you know, avert the gzera, or is it a waste of time? So the Rebbe says, we're going, I'm going. So I said, fine. So they get into the horse and buggy, whatever. And it's a long trip in the cold, you know, 800 kilometers, a huge trip. And they finally get to Peterburg, and they're freezing cold, everything. They get to the, you know, where they're staying, sitting there. They sit down, fine. And Rabbi Yisrael says to them, okay, so now, let's decide, should we try to avert the gzera or not? So they turn to, what? He said, Rebbe, that's what we discussed in Kovna, and you said, let's go already to Peterburg, you know. So we thought we're going to sit down and discuss how to avert the gzera, not if we're going to avert the gzera. We came all the way here. What did we come all the way here for? He said, listen. He says, I know the koach of Negius, right? If we were again in Kovna, and we were back in Kovna, and we said, should we go try to avert the gzera? What's it? We have personal bias, like, well, schlep 800 kilometers all the way to Peterburg and in the cold and thing. He says, yeah, so I know, that's a human being. Deep down, you're not going to make a clear decision of whether to try to do it because you don't want to go. You don't want to make you have the tircha. So you can't see things clearly. I figured if we come to Peterburg, so that's it. There's no more Ngias. We came here, we made the trip in the cold thing. So now we have to, now we can see things clearly. Should we try to avert the gzera? Should not try to avert the gzera? Reminded me of, he doesn't bring this down obviously, but when I was a bar mitzvah bachur, certain things, you know, stick in your mind from your youth. Once this Rebbe, and I had a question for us, just after bar mitzvah. So I asked the Rebbe, I said, you know, sometimes you get up, a person gets up in the morning and he's really, really tired, right? He's exhausted, right? And I said, does a person that is momish exhausted, does he still have to go to shul? So he says, no. You know, if he's really that tired, you know, no. So I said, okay, but I said to him, so how do you know to judge exactly, like, if you're really tired or not? So he told me the following. He says, I'll tell you. He says, here's what you do. He says, get up, get dressed, over there, right? Go to the shul. He says, and when you get to the door of the shul, before you open it, so then, you say, are you tired? And then, no, you don't have to dub it now if you're tired. If you're not tired, you're not. Right, reminded me of the same thing. It's like, you know, it's in bed. You know, you can't judge things properly. So go to the shul. So then, if you're still over there, I'm too tired to dumb it. Okay, fine. Then, anyway, so he said that Yisrael Salanter is very big on this idea. He said that the dayan is every person's a dayan in his own the way things he does. And we know a person that's a dayan that takes shochad can't think things clearly. He takes bribes. So he says so too. There's no greater bribe than a person's personal negias, his personal bias, right? Things that get in the way. Can't see things clearly. He brings here. Cute mice that happened with himself. He said that he went again one of his trips to America to collect money for his institutions. So he went to the Satmar Rebbe, that's all. he went into Zaru Rebbe. So the Rebbe said, "Who are you?" He says, "My name is Galinsky. I used to be in Siberia, whatever." Shiva Bachar. So he goes, "Oh yeah, I heard about you." He says, "And what are you here for?" He says, "I come to the Rebbe to get a bracha. I'm here collecting money for Torah institution, and I'm like to come. This came for a bracha from the Rebbe before I go out collecting." So the Rebbe turns to the Shamish and he says, "Give him $2,000." So he says, "Rebbe, I didn't ask for money. I just asked for a bracha." He says, "Ain't bracha shor of a kli reik. You can't have a bracha in an empty kli. You gotta have a full kli, then you can have a bracha." So give him $2,000. Okay, thanks. So then he, went on his way collecting. So he went into a Satmar Rebbe, Satmar Chassid, one of the Chassidim of the Rebbe, a very wealthy man, in Boropar. So he goes into the this guy, and he says, "I'm here collecting for an institution in Eretz Yisrael, whatever." So what does the Satmar Chassid say? He says, "Do you get help from the government, the Israeli government?" So he says, "Yeah, we get help, but it doesn't even cover like a quarter of the cost that we need." He says, "Sorry, as a Satmar Chassid, I don't give money to institutions in Eretz Yisrael." So he says, "Oh, okay, that's very interesting. Because I just let you know that as a Satmar Chassid, that the Rebbe, I came before I came to you, gave me actually $2,000 to my institution. So maybe you have a mitzvah to, emulate your Rebbe." So he said, "Listen, my Rebbe, if he wants to, go off and do his thing, that's his business, but I got to listen to what the Rebbe said. He can do what he wants, but I have to listen to what the Rebbe said." So Rav Galinsky said to the guy, he says, "Listen." He said, fine. He says, "If you listen to the Rebbe, every single thing he says, then he says, Chas v'chalam, I'm not going to take away. Yeah, you have to listen to your Rebbe. But if some things you don't exactly listen to your Rebbe, not every single thing he says, so then maybe you should make an exception here as well. And because maybe you're just trying to, avoid giving me money, you think of a personal bias here." So the guy pulled out his wallet and gave him $500. Okay. Finally, it says in the pasuk, "Vayom Moshe al Bnei Yisrael, Ru'u kara Hashem b'shem b'tzalel ben Uri ben Hur b'lemate Yehuda." That Bezalel was chosen to be the make the various things in the Mishkan. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said, "What's the shot Ru'u? What were they supposed to see?" So explains they're supposed to see that Bezalel was given tremendous kochos, and since he was given these kochos, he has to use them. That's what they saw. They saw what he did. Lachshav machshavod, lachshav bezal, bekesav echnoshes. He was given this potential, so he has to use it. Like Rav Yisrael Salant used to say, we mentioned before that in Bishamayim lo mechalkim matanot, Bishamayim manikim mesimot. In Shemayim, they don't give out freebies, don't give out gifts. In Shemayim, they give out tasks, assignments. Shem said, "This is your assignment. I'm giving you your kalim, and you have to use them and use them properly and do what you're supposed to do." There's a nice maysa that we learned this lesson from. He said that in the year 1900, he said there was an exhibition in Paris where people had different creations, different inventions, or whatever, and they had an exhibition and a competition, right? They're going to have judges, and the best invention, whatever, is going to win a gold medallion. So who won the prize? There was a fellow, he made a beautiful, beautiful, like a closet. And they call it the Wonder Closet. Why the Wonder Closet? Because besides it looked beautiful, but it was an amazing work of art, because the person would open it up, and there's all kinds of, there's drawers, that regular drawers, and hidden drawers, and shelves that flip down and flip up, and this, and all kinds of fancy things made to store chashuv items, like, because there were these hidden drawers, and people couldn't see. Anyways, so when he displayed it, he showed how it worked, and people were in awe. Like, they couldn't believe it. It was such an unbelievable masterpiece. So he won the prize, the gold medal. And in the end, it was sold to a very wealthy man in Vienna for 8,000 dinari zahav, a fortune of money. And he displayed it in his the entrance to his house, whatever. So what happened? As things happened, the Skvir, he went under. He lost his money. And before you know it, he had to, they came to liquidate, took away all his stuff. They had to sell his house. He went bankrupt. And he had this beautiful closet that they also was sold. But people didn't realize. They didn't know what was involved. They saw a closet, and they sold it for whatever. And the closet went from one hand to another hand, to this person, to that person, or whatever. And in the meantime, the leg was broken. It got all scratched up. And that didn't look like anything special. So where did it end up? It ended up by some shoemaker. Right, had a little thing. So he used it to play, you know, his book, to store his leather in one drawer and his needles in another drawer and his tools in another and a thing. Whatever, he used it in the corner of a shop. So what happens? This fellow that invented, that built this closet, okay, he happened to end up in Vienna, and he was, his sole fell off his shoe, whatever, needed a repair. So he goes into this, he asks, where is there a shoe repair? Okay, over here. So he goes into the shop. He says, can you fix my shoe? The guy says, yeah, no problem. So he takes off his shoe, gives it to him. And he's like waiting a little bit. And he's like, you know, looking around. And all of a sudden, his eye catches this closet, that his wonder closet that he made. And it's all beat up, you know, and like I said, the leg was missing. He was leaning on one side and all beat up. And he sees this guy, you know, go open the door and take out some leather from there and some tools, you know, from this closet, whatever. He fainted. He actually fainted on the spot. Like he, so the guy saw this, the shoemaker saw, he quick runs over here, get some water, whatever. Anyways, then he came to, and they said, you know, what happened? So he said, and he started crying. He says, what are you crying about? He says, my closet. He says, what about your closet? He said, come here. So he took him over the closet. You see this closet? You know what this is? This, he opens it up. He says, you don't know, but there's a hidden drawer over here. And this is where a person can keep his valuables, you know, his diamonds or whatever. And you see this thing? It flips down, and this is for these special documents fit in this place and this and his jewelry over here. And then, and look what it's being used for. I shouldn't cry? Yeah. So says so too. He says, "What's the nimshal?" Because Baruch Hu, we're all these wonder closets. Hashem gave us all these tremendous talents and hidden things that abilities to do tremendous things in the world. But what? Instead of using them for good things, what do? We use it for narshkeit. Right, instead of taking advantage of all the good things and for the gold and the silver and the jewels, we use them for the leather and the tools and the nails, and that's not what Hashem gave us. All these potential for. So we should remember as mezochet to take advantage of all the tremendous kelim, and remember that again, Hashem doesn't give gifts; He gives us tasks, gives us assignments, and we should try to fulfill our assignments to the best of our abilities. And if we do so, we can hope to see the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu b'Mehirah v'Yameinu.